All right, here we go. You got to wonder about the Saramashkin. You know, the Saramashkin, the Lo Zohar Saramashkin is Yosef in the end of last week's parsha. The butler didn't remember Yosef after he translated his dream for good, told him what was going to happen, and he forgot it. You got to wonder, why was that guy? Come on. You're going to be that way? You're really going to be that way? Yosef just translated your dream. He did all these good things for you. And this time you're going to get him back? I mean, you forget about him for 2 years? 2 years, all of a sudden Yosef gets a dream and you're like, oh yeah, that guy. I forgot about that guy. That guy who translated the dream for me. You gave me all my life, like all of a sudden. Like, that's crazy. And not only that, there's a medrash that's brought down in this week's parsha. I don't know where it is. It's quoted by the Ben Ish Chai. There's a medrash that says, and the Paro got so sick over this dream, he went to his bed and he was literally dying over the dream. He was dying trying to figure out what the dream meant. He could not figure it out for the life of him. Couldn't figure it out. Why would you delay in telling Paro about Yosef? I don't understand. Why couldn't you have just said that? Why couldn't you have just told him exactly what was going on? What's going on? Why in the world did he not even have a chance to go to advisors? You're the butler of the king. You're going to him every morning to give him whatever he needs. Why wouldn't you tell him immediately something about Yosef HaTzadik? Okay, the Ben Ish Chai says the most awesome answer. He says that the baker and the butler, we know what they did, right? The baker baked a stone inside the bread of Paro, while the butler brought a cup of wine with a little fly in it. That wasn't their only sin. They also had seduced the princess and convinced the princess to be together with them. Now, the problem was like this. Paro didn't want such a scandal to go out there. I mean, the National Enquirer would go crazy about it. In the royal kingdom, I mean, you have a king that's having that happen. He didn't want to have anything to do with this, and he didn't want anyone to know about the Saramashkin, the butler, and the baker being together with his daughter. So there was another thing that they did wrong, which was not so bad. I mean, they were both mistakes, but in theory, the butler and the baker, who already had a long-standing relationship with Paro, should have been over it. But because there was the other issue of the daughter that was involved here, he's trying to hush up the whole situation, so he made sure to punish them for the fact that there was a fly inside the wine, for a stone inside the oven. That's what they ended up being inside the bread itself. But he didn't want to do anything more than that. So now he had them in jail. Thought to himself the following. Rumors are going to be flying. If he kills them both over these seemingly insignificant things,
worst crimes, stealing from the treasure,
worst crimes than ever. I don't know if Paro is, I don't know that, I don't know, but regardless, this is the idea behind it. Here's the deal: if he kills both of them, then the rumors that are already flying that the butler and the baker were together with the princess, which I'm sure some people must have known about, those rumors would have gone exactly as they were. They would have been substantiated rumors. Why would Paro have killed these guys for what they did? It must be that they did something else, and it must be they were together with the princess. So what did he do? He purposely killed the baker, and then he let the butler go free. So people would say, oh, it was for something else. It wasn't really for the princess. It was because the baker is really responsible for almost killing the king by putting a rock in the bread, and the butler is really not so responsible for the fact that a fly fell into his wine. Meaning, he wanted to purposely squelch all the rumors out there, says the Ben Ish Chai. Now, when the butler got out and he was free, Paro would forget about whatever happened between the butler and his daughter. Now he's in a bit of a quandary. Now he's got a little bit of a problem. If he tells Paro about Yosef HaTzadik, hey, there's a guy in jail. He doesn't deserve to be in jail right now. Doesn't deserve to be in jail. You should really take him out. He translates dreams tremendously. You should really get him out. What's Paro immediately going to do? Well, let's look into his case. What's the case against Yosef? He had a master, and his master's wife claims that he seduced her. Meaning that there was another seduction of an eved, of a slave, to his master's wife instead of his master's daughter. That'll remind Paro about the situation of the butler, where he had seduced the king's daughter. The last thing he wanted to do was to bring this up in front of Paro. The last thing he wanted to do was bring up the fact that he was involved in some type of a situation of Arias. And if he starts remembering about that with Yosef, it may even strengthen the case for Yosef himself. Well, who has ever heard of a guy seducing his master's wife? Well, I've heard of a guy seducing his master's daughter. Maybe it's the exact same thing. Maybe it would be the exact same thing. So it's purposely, the butler purposely forgot about Yosef, would not bring him up because he was afraid that if he would bring him up, he's going to kill not only himself, but later on. He had to wait for a time that was safe. He'd have to wait for a time where both of them were going to be safe, where Paro was dying dream, begging for a dream to be translated. He wouldn't think about anything else except for the dream, and would not even remember what had happened to the butler 2 years ago with his daughter. He waited for it, and he got it. When that situation came up, and Paro was on his deathbed, that's when the butler came up and said, I think I got a guy for you. Now I got a guy for you. There were no questions of, who is this guy? Does he deserve to be there? What happened with this? And there were no questions about Yosef. It's just, bring him here right now, let's go. They threw him out of the pit, put on the new clothes, got him in front of Paro. There was no questions about anything else. That's the shot behind the butler.
Sarmashkin's worry also helps explain why there's a double wash. Below the heart, he didn't remember it, but he forgot it.
Very good. The thing is, Ben Ishai, you're sorry. That's the reason why.
No, below the heart would also mean he didn't mention him. And then Vaishkachay.
Oh, very, very good. Very good.
He's like, I'll postpone.
Very good, very good. You hear that? Well, Zohar, he didn't mention Yosef Vaishkachay, because he forgot him. The line from the Ben Ishai is below Zohar, he didn't remember him, meaning Vaishkachay, because he purposely forgot about him. That was the line from the Ben Ishai. But that's the idea of the Sarmashim. That goes well as well, that he didn't mention him on purpose. Says the Chassam Sofer, Paro was no fool. Okay, Paro was no fool. He knew why Yosef was down in jail, and he probably found out the information while they were giving him a haircut, changing his clothes, bathing him, getting him ready to stand in front of the king. Paro did a little bit of research. He found out about Yosef anyway. And he did know, says the Chassam Sofer, about what Yosef had been accused of. Now you should know, there's a line that he says to him in the very, very beginning. He says, Vayomer, where is it? I dreamt a dream. There is no translation of the dream. I didn't hear a translation. Listen to the line. And I heard about you saying, so you know how to translate dreams. Now hold on a second. Lamor? What does that word lamor mean? Lamor usually means to say to other people. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, lamor. To say over to other people. What is this lamor doing over here? I heard about you, lamor. Saying what? To say to other people? To say what? What does that mean? And then Yosef speaks up, Ayan Yosef as Paro, lamor. Yosef answered back Paro, saying, Biladoi, it's not me. It's not me. What's going on here? Well, what's going on? What's the line? There's a line, says the Chassam Sofer. The word lamor more appears when you're talking about Gilui Arayos. It brings down a Gemara in Nida that whenever it says the word lamor, it refers to an act of Gilui Arayos. Now here's the idea behind it. He told him, Paro looked at Yosef and said, I've heard the rumors about you. I've heard about you. Shamati Alef, I heard about you, lamor, that you're involved with Arayos. I heard some crazy things about you. You went for your master's wife, huh? I heard all about that. That's what he ended up saying. And by the way, you can also translate dreams. To which Yosef HaTzadik said back, by Yomer Yanis, Yosef is Paro, Lamor, that issue of Arias, Biladoi, that wasn't me. That was not the situation that happened to me. You don't understand what happened over there. Elokim Yanez Shalom Paro. And by the dream, God will answer your problems. That's what the word Lamor means. The Lamor is to get the issue of Gilui Arayos out of the way. That's what it ended up being. That he would not be intimidated whatsoever by anything that Paro was going to tell him. That's the idea of what he was trying to do over here. What are you going to say, Benjamin?
Could it be that Paro also wanted to cover up Yosef's crime by giving him Asnat with the daughter of Potiphar? Look, Paro gave Yosef.
The line is that it seems that that it was clear that Paro tried to make this shidduch between them, knowing that Hashas Potiphar was involved in the original case. It's very interesting, but remember, these Mitzrayim were full of Arias. Most probably, he wanted him around Hashas Potiphar again to see what would happen. I hear.
If he was in jail, it was like, who's a slave who was in jail? Like, okay, guy. If he didn't really do
it. No, it's really a good, clear guy. Exactly.
If,
yes,
if right. Yosef was involved with Hashas Potiphar, and they did do the sexual act, would Yosef still have been Yosef?
We have no clue, and Baruch Hashem, there's nothing to deal with. If something would have happened, there still would have been a shade that called Yosef. It just would have been different. We just have no idea what it would have been. The same way that Yehuda and Tamar, in some way, although it's very different, the Ishish aspect, but there still would have been something we just have no idea why. Now, listen to this, Dvar Torah, guys. This is one of the better ones. Okay, this is a Gan Rabbah.
What does this
mean?
Yeah. Does it always mean?
No, not always. It's just when it's used out of place, it can be a reference to Arias.
Oh, okay.
It's a you reference. That's why it mentions in Parshas Arayos, it mentions the word lamor. That's what it can be used for. Everyone asks why at the end of the dream, Yosef tells, he translates the whole dream perfectly, 7 years of famine, 7 years of satiation, there's going to be this and that and the other, and then he says, well, and by the way, you should set up a guy. He gives him advice. You set up a guy to be in charge of everything, right? He should be the guy in charge of everything. And Paro, of course, says, well, who is fit to do that except, you know, more than you? And Yosef's like, oh, me? Who gave you such an idea? It seems a little weird. What is he doing advising Paro in the middle of nowhere? Paro didn't ask for advice. Paro can decide on his own what to do about these 7 years of satiation, 7 years of famine. Why would Yosef get up, have the audacity to add on something that seemingly has nothing to do with the dream? I'm sorry?
I want the dreams to come true,
of course. But like, there's something weird here that you don't say that in front of a king. Again, we don't know what it's like speaking to a king. You don't use extraneous words. You don't use anything more than what you have to have. So why would he tell him something like this? The Ganrav that says you have to know three things to answer this question. You ready for this? Three things. Number one, we know that this day was Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that Yosef was taken out of jail on Rosh Hashanah. So we know that. That means that the dream was when? The night before, which is the night of Rosh Hashanah. That's the first thing we have to know. The night of Rosh Hashanah is exactly when he had this dream. Number two, Gemara Rosh Hashanah Tes Vav Amud Beis says that the world is judged. It can't be. That's wrong. Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. That's a mistake. Tells us that the world is judged at four different times. Four different times. And on Pesach, we're judged for grain and food and hunger and everything like that. On Rosh Hashanah, people are judged. People are going to be judged. That's number two. Number three, Brachos Nun Heyomad Bey says three things are announced by God Himself. God gets involved and He does them. Ra'av, hunger, Saba, satiation, and Aparnas, a leader that's going to be in charge of everybody. All these three things are announced by God Himself through some type of Ruach HaKodesh to somebody in the generation. Okay, the translators, the Chartumim of Paro, heard this dream, right? And they looked at it and they're like, let's see. The staples of the food and economy are cows and wheat. And there are skinny cows that eat fat cows, and there are skinny wheat that eats fat wheat.
They eat cows?
It's got to be talking about daughters and cities. Where did they come up with that? Seven daughters are going to be captured? Seven cities are going to be captured? Well, I don't understand. Why wouldn't they have said the most obvious thing? I know I'm looking at it with hindsight, 20/20 vision. How did you not realize this dream is about food? How do you not figure out that the two staples of Mitzrayim are in there? The Nile River, which is all involved with everything in the food of Mitzrayim. How do you not realize it's talking about food? These guys are dream translators for a living. You can't say that they never heard of these things before. Why wouldn't they have translated it in the right way? Now we have an answer. This dream was on Rosh Hashanah, not on Pesach. On Rosh Hashanah, people are judged. On Pesach, grain and saba and rav are judged. That's when those things are judged. There's no way this can be talking about a hunger because he's having the dream at the wrong time. Why would he be having it on the night of Rosh Hashanah if it's at the wrong time? You'd have to assume they at least knew a little bit about this. They have to know something about this. But it was there. So therefore, they translated it totally differently. Said it must be dealing with people. Seven daughters, seven cities. It's got to be dealing with people because there's no way it's dealing with food. It's not the time to translate as food. Said Yosef, they're wrong. It is talking about a hunger. It is talking about satiation. It's 100% what it's talking about. It's talking about the upcoming hunger. Why was it told to you today? Why do you know about it right now? Why was this being told to you now? Because the whole point of the dream is to try to find someone that will be in charge of it all. Someone's got to be in charge and someone's going to have to do this for you. The whole dream is to find somebody who's going to be in charge. So that's why he said it at the end of the dream. He translated the dreams and he said, you know why you're having it now? You know why your translators couldn't figure it out? Because you're trying to hire someone. And that guy, it was decided on Rosh Hashanah that he's going to go from jail to a kingly position. That's why you had it in Rosh Hashanah. That's why you're giving it right now on this night specifically. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And that was the proof that it was a good translation. And all the advisors of Paro heard it. And they said, that's Pshat. That's why. That's why we couldn't figure it out. That's exactly what it was supposed to be. That's what made Paro realize that he should hire him. And now it's unbelievable, right? Because the three things that are announced by God Himself were the Rav, the Sava, and the Parnas. The leader, which was going to be made through Yosef HaTzadik himself, who was going to translate the dreams. That's the idea behind this entire dream, why the translators couldn't figure it out. There's a line, says the Chassam Sofer, the Adnan, I don't know how, the Chassam Sofer somewhat says this word, but doesn't say it completely. Yosef starts off and says, Es Asher Elokim Asa, that which God is going to do, meaning that he does himself, Rav, Sava and Parnas, he Gidla Paro. He's telling himself to Paro because he announces these three things himself more than anybody else. That's the idea behind it. I thought that was brilliant, a brilliant idea, and what was going to be how to understand why the cartoon couldn't translate and why Yosef HaTzadik felt it had to be that way. Okay. We all know the question, okay? I've got about, we've said over the years probably about 6 answers to this question. Why, when Yosef first saw the brothers, did he make himself look strange to them? Why not just say straight out who he was and just say, hey, it's Yosef! And the Shlatan will be like, no way! We were looking for you! Why not say that when the Shlatan came up to him for the very first time, how could he not reveal himself to him? When he had to make himself look strange, he had to go through this whole parsha of going crazy and doing stuff like that. Yosef at Tzadik is going to give pain over them. So what do you mean by embarrass him? He didn't want to embarrass him. That's the answer. That's the answer we're going with this year. Kedushas Levi says an answer, and it's very, very interesting. Levi is very Kedushas. It shows the true nature and the tzitkus of Yosef HaTzadik. Now, think about what he did over here. He knew his brothers never accepted his dream. Remember the dreams? They would all bow down to him. He knew they hated that dream, and they didn't want to go anywhere near bowing down to Yosef. They didn't want anything to do with that. Yosef didn't want the brothers to realize that he had already defeated them. They bowed down to him before he realized who they were. They bowed down to him, and all of a sudden he said, oh my gosh, it's them. And they just bowed down to me. They just were Mekayim the dream. He was such a person. He was a tzaddik who didn't want them to be thinking anything bad. But he didn't want them to even feel upset. So he hid himself from them. He didn't know how long he'd be able to keep up this charade. But he knew he would do it until the brothers would no longer be embarrassed. Until they no longer would have that embarrassment to them. And that's the pshat. They were bowing down in the middle of the dream to a sheaf of wheat in the middle. They couldn't tell it was Yosef. It was bowing down. The 11 sheaves of wheat bowed down to one sheaf of wheat in the middle. It wasn't Yosef. In the second dream was the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to Yosef himself. That's the idea behind it. But this is the concept. He knew they were going to be upset about it. So he purposely told them, don't worry. He purposely made himself look strange to them so they wouldn't feel anything bad, and that was it. He tried to get around it in some way, shape, or form.
He must have developed something because you had him go down and bring back
Binyamin. There had to be more to it. That's for sure true. Bring back Binyamin, whatever it was. There's also strange things about throwing them in jail for 3 days, then pulling them out, putting Shimon back in, and taking everyone back. There's something that he must have been doing within a kapara type of aspect, or the idea of trying to be Mekayim the dreams, which is what the Ramban says. We've mentioned that before. It's just a very interesting way of looking at it, that it was really not to embarrass them. He didn't want to embarrass them by a shocker. He waited until there was a proper time, and unfortunately, eventually, he couldn't come to a proper time. He just kept crying and crying and crying. So at least there's something there. At the very end of the parsha, Yehuda says to Yosef, "Ma no mar ladoni, what can we say to my master?" Remember, this is after Binyamin was accused of stealing the cup. Unbelievable, right? Binyamin, who is known to have never sinned. Gemara and Baba Basra on Tes Zayin Amud Beis mentions that there were 4 people who never sinned. One of them is Binyamin. And he's accused of stealing the cup, and the brothers seem to believe it. They tear their clothing and they go crazy. According to Medrash, they were hitting Binyamin for stealing the cup, calling him a thief, son of a thief, because his mother, Rachel, also stole Truffin, the idols, from Lavan. They called him a thief, the son of a thief. This is the greatest, one of the greatest men to have ever lived, Binyamin. They say, Vayomer Yehuda, man omar lo dini, what can we say to my master? Man edaber, what can we speak? Uman nitz tadok. And how can we become righteous in front of you? Elohim matzot avon avedecha. God found the sin of your servants. Hinenu avodim lavini, gam anachton gam shem zelk of Yehuda. We'll all be slaves to my master. That's what we'll do. We'll all be slaves to you. And Yosef says, no, obviously that starts the whole fight. In the beginning of Yehuda going up to Yosef and saying, look, dude, I don't know where you came from, but we got to stop this right now. That's Yehuda in next week's parsha. The word nitztadok, says the Chassam Sofer, stands for the 5 letters, Nun, Tzadi, Tes, Dalid, Kuf, stand for the 5 sins that the Shvatim did, that they were over on, in which they said there was nothing wrong with what we did. What did the Shvatim do wrong? So here we go. They stole the cup, right? They said, Nechonim Anachno, and that's the Nun. We are correct. We did not steal anything, but since you caught us, we're ready and willing, and that's the word of Nachon, we're ready to go with whatever punishment you want to give us. That's the Nechonim. For the sale of Yosef Atzadik, that we sold our brother down to Mitzrayim, they said they were tzadikim. That's the tzad. We are tzadikim. We did everything exactly kedin. Maybe we weren't litnim mishur tzadikim, we weren't chasidim, but we were tzadikim. We did everything according to the letter of the law, and we thought he was chayiv misa, and we sold him down to Mitzrayim. We are tzadikim when it comes to that. For Maisa Shechem, when Shimon and Levi had destroyed the entire city of Shechem, they said they were tahorim, pure. They knew that Shechem had been metame, had put tuma on Dina Ahu, some on Dina, their sister. So they said, tahorim anachnu. We are tahor, we are 100% pure, we did not do anything wrong when it came to that issue. When it came to Maisa Reuven, with Reuven switching around the beds, they said that they were dakim. You're right, that was done wrong, but they done tshuva ad daka, dalid chaf aleph. They were dakim. They were now innocent because they had done tshuva for that deed, and thus dakim anachnu. And the final one is Maisa Tamar, Yehuda and Tamar. They said they were kedoshim. Kadosh is just a bit off from the word kadesh, and kadesh as in a prostitute, a male and a female prostitute. I did not do this, said Yehuda, in a way that was like a kadesh and a kadesh. I did not do it in a bad way. I did it in a holy way, and I was mekayim the mitzvah of yibum by being together with my daughter-in-law Tamar, as we spoke about last week, and Hashem was involved the whole time. And that's what they were saying. You have claims against us, Yosef. And Yosef, according to the Medrash, was hitting a cup and claiming all the bad deeds that the Shvatim had done. I see that you guys switched around your father's bed. I see that you guys killed the city of Shechem. Obviously, he knew it. I see you guys sold your brother. I see you guys did this, that, and the other. Yosef was able to see the sins to which Yehuda now is referring back to and saying, Mani Tzadok. You want us to righteousify ourselves? I don't know if that's a word, but I just made it up. You want us to make ourselves righteous? I will tell you, Nechonim, Tzadikim, Tahorim, Dakim, Kedoshim, Anachnu. And that's the word Nitzadok. That's what they were trying to say to him. We are 100% innocent when it comes to this. Now,
with the other things, except, I mean, for Shem and all that, all the brothers were involved in that, but
so too with Yehuda and Tamar, right? Yehuda and Tamar was also. Yeah, I think it's the five sins that all the Shatim could have been involved with. That they could have been involved with, that's what they were claiming on. Meaning anything that you had gotten us for that he had mentioned when he hit the cup, now they were answering up. That's the idea behind it. So that's what he was referring to over here. A very strange thing happens in the middle. We're going to end with this idea over here. What in the world was Yosef's intentions in giving them bris milas? He goes around to all of Mitzrayim. It's such an unbelievable part. It says, "Vatira kol eretz Mitzrayim." By Yitzak amol paro l'racham. They all screamed for to paro for bread. By Yomar paro l'chol Mitzrayim l'chul Yosef asher yomar l'cham tasu. Go to Yosef. Whatever he tells you to do, do. Says the Medrash. What does that mean? Whatever he tells you to do, do. Says that Yosef Atzadik told the Mitzrayim, "You guys got to all get bris milas. If you get bris milas, I'll give you food. If you don't get bris milas, I'm not going to give you any food." So Paro, they went to Paro. They're like, "What should we do?" Paro's like, "Look, this guy is crazy. This guy's trampling the dreams. I mean, what do you want me to do? Just get your bris milas and get your food. There's nothing I can do about it." Said Paro, "I can't do anything about it." Unbelievable. Why in the world would Yosef Atzadik give them bris milas? Why would he feel that was necessary? Was he trying to be Megayer them? You can't forcibly be Megayer anyone in Mitzrayim. That clearly cannot be the idea. And I don't understand. Did he force everyone to get a bris milah? Not only the Egyptians, but the people who came to buy? The Shvatim probably would have heard about that. Don't you think that people who came back from Mitzrayim at some point would have talked to the Shvatim and been like, "Oh man, just went to Mitzrayim. You'll never believe what they made me do to get my bread. Like, you can't believe this. It was the craziest thing in the world. It made me circumcise myself just to get bread." You don't think the Shvatim would be like, "What? Are you kidding me?" I'm sorry?
They didn't talk to
them. You'd assume they had at least one conversation. And this is something that probably made every newspaper back then. I would assume, like, everybody's getting bris milas because they need bread and Yosef is making everyone. But it must be that it didn't happen. So we just gave the Egyptians bris milas. That's even crazier. Okay, guys, if you're a citizen of Mitzrayim, the only way for you to get bread is to get a bris milah. If you're not, come in. What does that mean? How would he do that to people? How could anyone agree with that? Anybody who's outside of Mitzrayim is allowed to just come in and take bread and buy bread and that's it by the Egyptians? They can only do it with a bris milah? That's crazy talk. Absolute crazy talk. What was his plan and what was he trying to do? Says Rabbi Yaakov, it seems that Yosef came down to Mitzrayim to make Gullus easier on everybody else. To make an easier Gullus. The angel of Mitzrayim, does anybody know his name? What? It is. It's two midrashim. One is Mitzrayim. Right? When they saw Mitzrayim, Mesel Sfatiyam, they said that that's the angel of Mitzrayim is called Mitzrayim. But there's another one. He's also the Tsar of the Yam. He's also known as the Tsar of the Yam. Rahav. Rahav is the name of the guy who's in charge of Mitzrayim. It's a really weird name. Rahav stands for pride. I don't know the etymology of the word. I don't know the etymology of any word, but I definitely don't know the etymology of this word. How Rahav means gaiva and pride. But that's what Rabbi Yaakov says, maybe with his Hebrew, and says that that's what all the Egyptians were involved with. Think of the Egyptians for a second, guys. They refused to eat bread with the Ephraim. With the Ephraim. Why? Because the Ephraim were evil people. Ephraim, they couldn't stand.
They ate their gods. Ephraim would eat sheep. And
that's definitely true, but it seems they never ate with Yosef HaTzadik. Twice in the Torah, we have two times where Yosef was with Potiphar, and it says Potiphar trusted him with everything except for his bread. And later on, when the Shvatim are eating, it says the Mitzrayim would not eat with the Ephraim because there was a Taleva to them to eat with the Mitzrayim. Now, granted, it was because sheep, but you think they were always eating lamb chops? Always, there will, I would also. But regardless, it seems very, very strange. What does that mean? It means that the Egyptians treated the Ephraim as if they were beneath them. They were nobodies. They didn't care. Yosef going down there, he felt that the way to knock down the Egyptians and to have the Gullus be easy was to knock down the pride of the Egyptians. Now, what was the pride of the Egyptians? Yechezkel. Tes Zayin Chav Gimel. It's okay if you don't know it. It goes through the fatness of Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim were huge, massive guys, Balei Basar, and they were proud of their flesh. Excess flesh for Mitzrayim was a sign of godliness. Now, I don't know how that goes into our physical specimens, because if the mummies were really that fat, they probably wouldn't have fit into those coffins. So I'm not so sure how that worked out. I'm not so exactly sure. But it must be that there was some type of pride in the flesh of the Egyptians. Maybe it was the fact that they worked out the same way that the Greeks were very involved with their bodies. But Yosef took the richest and fattest Egyptians that he could find, the guys that had the most pride, the biggest egos, and everything there, and he cut off their excess flesh. He gave them a bris milah. It's a brilliant way of looking at it. He took it off to knock down their pride a little bit and throw it down to the ground. He hoped that this would lead to a breakdown of their overall gaiva, pride-based society. That instead of them having a society based on who's the biggest, who's the fattest, who's the greatest, instead of them having that, instead they'd have something different. There would be a hunger, so to speak, that would precede the gullus of the Jews down there. They wouldn't be able to eat as much, they wouldn't be as prideful, and thus they wouldn't be as sinful as they normally would. Maybe that's the pshat behind why a bris milah is supposed to knock down your taiva for a rise. Maybe that's it. You get rid of your excess pride, your excess flesh. Maybe that makes you a little less sinful. Maybe that's the idea behind it, the concept of having their gullus in Mitzrayim itself. Maybe this is the idea of what they were trying to do in the first place. Specifically have a hunger with an Ivri in charge to knock down their pride and show them Mitzrayim were not so special. Unfortunately, we all know it didn't work. The Jews came down there and they liked it. They thought it was great. Yeah, let's get involved in fatty stuff and let's do everything. Let's be like the Mitzrayim. Let's get involved in everything they do and build up our bodies and not build up our ruchnius. Thus, when the Bnei Yisrael came down to Mitzrayim, they ended up stopping giving themselves bris milah. They wanted the excess flesh. They wanted what the Mitzrayim had. Maybe it's the same exact deal by the Greeks and Hanukkah. Maybe it's the idea of the Greeks believed in their body, a different type of body, not big, but as in strong and building up your body. While the Jews, I know you're going to work out right after this, but then most of us aren't. Ever. So, that's that. I mean, we're just not into it as much. I once asked my wife, I said to her, she was talking about somebody, this whole world that she lives in, and she, listen, this whole world that she works in, like all the people. I'm like, what do these people do at night? Like, what do they do? If you don't have Seder to go to, and you're ending work at 5 o'clock, what do you do from 6 to 12? So, what do you do?
Drink.
So I found out, yeah, there's three separate societies. There is the TV society. The TV society that watches TV show after TV show after TV show, everything that you can get, seasons and this and that and the other, and you have all this time to be able to make it up. There is the workout society. The workout society where everybody's going to workout rooms, they're like, hey, look at me. And they're all swimming and dancing and whatever it is. And then there's the bar society. The bar society of people just drinking until they flop. Right? That would be that. I know the bar society from Cheers. I still remember Cheers. So I still got that one down. The workout society I'm still not so into, but that's basically Greek mentality. And when it comes to the TV show, that's just lazy bums.
So the workout mentality could be Vinny Schmartz and Mel and Ashton.
I know. And there are people that are zocha to all three. They get to work out, go to the bar, watch TV, maybe even Facebook as well. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's a different world by these guys. I'm sorry? Yeah, you can do it all. Right, while you're there, you can watch TV on the thing that you're working out on while playing on your phone and Facebook. Oh, I'm working out right now, guys. With a picture, you could tweet to everyone you know while going ahead, while, of course, drinking a little bit with the girl who's next to you on the machine right next to you. What a society. Unbelievable. Full of mitos. Only working on your mitos and only working on your chokmah. What an unbelievable society. That's the idea of what we are trying to break down, of what Jewish society is supposed to not down. Well, we have to say to them, it's not going to happen. So don't work out. Not that much. Okay, a little. Okay? Don't work out that much so you become like the Greek gods. So you start neglecting the bris milah the Greeks so badly wanted to take away. Don't go ahead and watch these TV shows that are so crazy. I'm telling you, I don't have a tie before them anymore. I'm sure I have a little bit of a tie before them. But I don't know. My wife tells me about this show called The Biggest Loser. About breaking down your fat.
You're the biggest loser.
That is not true. It probably is, but it's such an unbelievable type of thing. To not have that, I mean, come on. Like, to give it up. And then to say, look, maybe knock out the bars. I think that should be kind of easy. I mean, it's good to drink alone. Let's just say it's much better that way. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbat.